Welcome to Practical Christian Living.
He knows the difficulties that we face. He knows the dark times. He could do something to avoid it. He could stop the storm completely from coming, but God could be doing myriads of things in the storm.
J. Vernon McGee once said, "One day, when in the presence of our Savior, we will thank Him for every trial." God allows dark times for a reason. He never promised we would be without them on this earth, but He did promise He would be with us through them all. Lord, please give us Your perspective in the trials that we might glorify You. With Acts chapter 27, here's Robert Furrow, pastor of Calvary, Tucson.
Jesus said that in this world you will have tribulation. Now that's not a promise that you hear many people claiming. I claim the tribulation that Jesus gave me. The promise of tribulation. I had said for a while that you've never seen a plaque hanging up in anybody's house that in this world you will have tribulation. And of course, one of you guys decided to make me a plaque. So I actually have a plaque that I hung up in my garage away from my saw that in this world you will have tribulation. Jesus also said that we are to rejoice when we are persecuted for His name's sake. It's been said that there are three kinds of people in the world: those who are in the middle of a storm, those who are coming out of a storm, and those that are going into a storm. And of course, having a storm, a difficulty, a dark time is the common denominator between all of those. We are going to face struggles and difficulties. And here's the thing. God knows. He knows the difficulties that we face. He knows the dark times. He could do something to avoid it. He could stop the storm completely from coming. But God could be doing myriads of things in the storm. God is not anywhere near as concerned with your comfort as you are. I wish He was. I wish more so that God was more concerned with my comfort than He is about my growth. But God does a lot of things in the middle of a storm. God might be looking at me and saying the best thing for Robert right now is that he faces a storm. God said, and God causes all things to work together for the good, to those who love Him, to those who are called according to His purpose. And we have that promise to hang our hat on, that God's going to cause good to come about from it. But here's the thing. The storm might not have anything to do with me at all. It might have to do with people that are around us. It might be that people would see us in the midst of the storm. I believe that we never shine brighter than when dark, difficult days come. People watch us the closest in the storms to see if we really believe what we say we believe, or if we're ready to bail out. And sometimes people do. Sometimes people say, you know what, God allowed this to happen in my life, and I can't believe God did that, and we struggle with bitterness. The words of Warren Wiersbe. Warren Wiersbe said, difficulties in lives will either make you better or they will make you bitter. And sometimes that's not an easy thing to break down, to move out of that bitterness and to say to God, you know what, God, my life is Yours. We surrendered our lives to Him anyway. We said, we're Yours. We'll do what You want us to do. We'll die for You. We'll live for You. We'll go where You want us to go. And then when difficult times happen to us, we go, didn't You say You would stop them? When there is never a promise of such, that the difficulties in our lives would not be faced. So Paul has appealed to Caesar. That's like appealing to the Supreme Court. If you appeal to the Supreme Court and you're granted that your case is going to be heard before the Supreme Court, one thing that it guarantees is that you can have an audience. You might only send your lawyer, but you could have an audience before the Supreme Court. When Paul appealed to Caesar and it was granted to him, then Paul was going to Rome. Paul was going to Caesar. And I think he was pretty excited about it. Paul had been told while he was in Jerusalem 2 years before this, and he was arrested, you have testified of me in Jerusalem, and you will do so in Rome as well. I got to think he was happy about going there. He was excited about it. But the trip would prove to be difficult. It reads like a log book. You get the sense of Luke's ability to understand his surroundings and to give detail in what they're facing. Verse 1 of chapter 27. And when it was decided that we should sail to Italy. Now notice the "we" there right away. Who would that "we" be? Paul and Luke. So we know that Luke is still a companion of Paul. I believe that God builds teams, that God puts people around us that help to support us. I think that Paul was as much of a support to Luke as Luke was to Paul and the others who were with him. And it says they delivered Paul and some other prisoners to one named Julius. I wonder what it looked like when Paul was delivered to Julius. Paul, remember, had said to Agrippa, "I would that you would become altogether like me this day, except these chains." Paul had been arrested. Paul was yet to be charged, and yet Paul was in chains. They took him in chains, and they brought him on this ship with a group of other prisoners. And they delivered him to a guy by the name of Julius, a centurion of the Augustan regiment. We really can't figure out a lot about the Augustan regiment. It seems like there were a lot of different regiments that were called that. This centurion, like many other centurions in the Bible, is a great guy. It's interesting to me, you don't really find a centurion who's bad. You find other guys who are, like Roman, you know, governors, like Pilate or Felix. But centurions always seem to be good. I don't know what that means, by the way. I don't think it means anything. It's just interesting. So entering a ship of Adramyttium. You need to say these things confidently when you say them. Adramyttium. So entering the ship of Adramyttium, we put to sea, meaning to sail along the coast of Asia. Aristobulus, a Macedonian of Thessalonica, was with us. Now, they're just trying to beat the winter. They're heading off, and it's early enough where they might be able to make it. If they can't make it, ships in their day were not like today. Today, you can tack, even a sailboat. Any of you guys messed around much with a sailboat? Anybody? One person? Two people. All right. You were like, "My toy sailboat." That's what it was, just a little toy sailboat. I just messed around with it. You can tack into the wind. Today, we have the technology that you can tack into the wind and you can make some progress even when the wind is against you. In their day, you couldn't. So if the winds were going with you, you could make it there. If they weren't, you couldn't. So you might have to stop and winter. They knew that that was a possibility, that they might have to stop and winter, and then when spring came around, they would be able to make their way to Rome. So they head off, and so entering a ship, and it tells us, and the next day we landed in Sidon, and Julius treated Paul kindly and gave him liberty to go with his friends and receive care. And we don't know what kind of care Paul needed at this point. At this point, Paul is probably in his 60s. We know that he's got an ailment, probably an eye disease, for several reasons. It's interesting that in the next chapter, on an island, Paul will pray for people and they will be healed, but Paul himself doesn't get healed. Paul had prayed for the thorn in his flesh to be removed 3 times, and God finally said, "My grace is sufficient for you." Paul also talked about the thorn in his flesh doing a work within him, humbling him particularly. If it indeed was an eye disease, you can imagine you're proclaiming the resurrection of Jesus. You're proclaiming the great things of God, and you have a visible illness, and it would be a humbling thing. When we had put to sea from there, we sailed under the shelter of Cyprus because the winds were contrary. And when we had sailed over the sea, which is off of Cilicia and Pamphylia, we came to Myra, the city of Lycia. And you guys all know where we're at, right? You're following that map in your mind. These are all kind of small islands that are up off of the area of Turkey. If you're going to go from Jerusalem and you're going to go to Italy, you're going to have to cross the Adriatic Sea. And because of the time of year it was, they didn't take the direct route. They went up and they tried to hide in the islands as best as they could to save themselves from the wind and maybe make some time. It says, and when we had sailed over the sea, which is by Sicilia and Pamphylia, we came to Myra in the city of Lycia. There, the centurion found an Alexandrian ship sailing to Italy, and he put us aboard. An Alexandrian ship would be an Egyptian ship coming out of Alexandria, Egypt, coming from North Africa, probably going by the coast of Israel all the way up to where they were, and he put them aboard, the centurion being with them. And when he had sailed slowly many days and arrived with difficulty off of Cnidus, the wind not permitting us to proceed, we sailed under the shelter of Crete off Salome. Passing it with difficulty, we came to a place called Fair Havens near the city of Lasea. So now the trip has already had some difficulties. And if you're looking at a map, they haven't gone very far at this point. They started on one ship, they got into another ship, and now things are tough. Verse 9, now when much time had been spent, and sailing was now dangerous, probably waiting for the weather to clear, the headwinds to stop, now sailing would be dangerous. Because of the feast that was already over, Paul advised them. This would be a Jewish feast, the fall feast, saying, men, I perceive that this voyage will end with disaster. Now, I don't know how Paul perceived this. Paul's looking at them making a decision. He feels like they need to make a proper decision. We're told in the book of, I think it's 2 Corinthians, that Paul had been a part of 4 shipwrecks. This wasn't Paul's first rodeo, as they say. He'd been here before. And maybe Paul was just enough of a seaman. At this point, we usually make a joke, you know, that Julius is going to listen to the sailors rather than to a preacher. Here he is, a partially blind rabbi, and he's giving sea advice to a bunch of sailors. And they're not prone to take it. But Paul probably had a lot of experience. He had been shipwrecked before, and he did not want to be shipwrecked again. In fact, Paul had said, I spent a day and a night in the sea. He was stranded on the ocean for a day and a night, which is a brutal thing, right? So he says, I perceive that we are in danger because the feast was already passed. Paul advising them, saying, men, I perceive the voyage will end in disaster and much loss, not only of the cargo and the ship, but also of our lives. Nevertheless, the centurion was more persuaded by the helmsman and the owner of the ship than the things spoken by Paul. And because the harbor was not suitable to winter in, probably didn't have all of, there's some 270 men aboard this ship. They probably didn't have all of the provisions that they needed to be able to winter comfortably. This also, Fair Havens, was kind of a little port in a small city. It's just not a place that sailors want to spend the winter. So they gave it to a vote. Had all the sailors there. How many of you want to go on to Phoenix? Phoenix is a harbor, which we're going to see here in a minute. And how many of you want to stay here? And they all voted to go to Phoenix. And because the harbor was not suitable to winter in, the majority advised to set sail from there also, if by any means they could reach Phoenix, a harbor of Crete, opening towards the south and the northwest, and winter there. It was a larger place where they would have all the provisions that they needed, and the sailors would have a lot to do during that winter. Now, the majority voted on going, and the majority were wrong. How many of you know that the majority of people can make the wrong decision? In a political season, does anybody understand where I'm going? Aren't you glad that we don't put our hope in the future, in the policies or the politics of this world? Every 4 years, there are a certain amount of people at the church that really want us to be political. And I think that their hearts are right. Not that they are necessarily right, but their hearts are right in that they see what's taking place. They're invested in it. They've listened to perhaps one too many Rush Limbaugh shows or Sean Hannity shows or Glenn Beck shows, and they've gotten all fired up about it, and they don't get enough of it in the radio during the week. They want to come to church and hear more. And so people will encourage me. You need to talk about these things. These things are so important. As if, it's not that I don't believe that if every pastor all across the United States, every one of them, got political, that we might not be able to make a difference. Because maybe we could, as far as who wins and who loses. Maybe we could. However, I don't know whether it would make a difference in the long run. Whoever gets in, I don't know that that would make it, because we don't put our trust in politicians. This is a political free zone. It's a real political free zone. But if you are just sold on being political, if you're just sold on it, then I've got good news for you. There are lots of churches that are political. And you can, hey, just take a break for a while. I don't want you to go forever. Just take a break until the election is done. And that way, every time you go to church, you can talk about the, and I tell you what, if you're a Democrat, there are churches that all they talk about is politics on the Democratic side. If you're a Republican, there's churches around just for you. But we're not going to be one of them. Because I don't believe it makes a difference. And I think that the pulpit is for us to talk about the things that really make a difference. And that is God intervening in the hearts of men and women and radically changing lives. I believe it is a far higher call and far more important. And I don't want to be involved in it. Periodically, someone will come to me and say, hey, well, this Calvary Chapel pastor's involved politically and that Calvary Chapel pastor's involved politically. And I say, hooray for them. That's really good. I'm glad for them. They have all the freedom in the world to get involved with any candidate they want to get involved in. I, on the other hand, do not want to do that. And I think I've said the reasons why. So anyway, this is a good opportunity for me to get out there that we are not going to be political. Our church isn't, because direction doesn't always come well from the majority. If that were the case, then we would always have the people that should be in power. And, well, that's enough said about it. If I keep talking, I'm going to get political sooner or later. So they vote on it, and they head off to go to Phoenix. Verse 13, when the south wind blew softly. I love that. The south wind blows softly. And that would be blowing up from Africa, across the Mediterranean Sea, up towards the Adriatic, and up towards Italy. So when a wind blew softly, they were like, oh, this is it. Now, they've only got to go 40 miles, by the way. From where Fairhaven is to where the port of Phoenix is only 40 miles. When the south wind blew softly, supposing they had tamed their desire, putting out to sea, they sailed close by Crete. They were careful. This is the time of year when things turn ugly. But not long after a tempest, head wind arose, called the Euroclydon. So when the ship was caught, the Euroclydon is a strong northwest wind. It would drive them away from the coast and would drive them back out into the heart of the Mediterranean Sea. In fact, some believe that they were in danger of being blown all the way over to the north part of Africa. So when the ship was caught, they could not head into the wind. We let her drive, meaning they just let the boat go. They didn't have the sails up. They just let the boat go with the water. And running under the shelter of an island called Claudia, we secured the skiff with difficulty. The skiff normally would hang over the edge of the boat in the old boats because the storm was beating the skiff against the ship, and they wanted the skiff in case they needed to escape. The skiff is just a small boat that you can lower down and escape the boat if necessary. And so they secured that with difficulty. And when they had taken it on board, they used cables to undergird the ship. You know that you're in a lot of trouble when you are threading cables around the ship and tying your ship together in hopes to keep it from falling apart. This will tell you the brutality of the storm that they were involved in. It goes on to say, and fearing lest they should run aground on the Stardis sands, they struck sail. So they've realized we're going the wrong direction here. We're going to run aground. They struck sail, let the wind take them. And so we're driven. And because we were exceedingly tempest-tossed, the next day they lightened the ship. When sailors start to lighten the ship, that means that there's a significant amount of trouble. The more weight that is in the ship, the more the ship's going to sink down into the water, the more the waves are going to beat against the ship. It's going to take the brunt of it and be broken apart. So they lighten the ship to make it lighter on the water so it can float with the waves rather than being beaten by them. And on the third day, we threw the ship's tackle overboard. Now, you know if they're throwing things overboard that they don't want, that's one thing. When you start throwing ship tackle overboard, you know that things have now turned serious. It goes on to say, the tackle overboard by our own hands. Now, when neither the sun nor the stars appeared for many days, and no small tempest beat on us day after day after day. It's not just saying it was dark. They steered by the stars. They steered by the sun. If they can't see the sun and they can't see the stars, they have no idea where they are. It says all hope that we would be saved would finally be given up. Now, when is 270 sailors ever going to reflect upon their lives in the presence of a man who was called to preach the gospel to a Gentile? All of a sudden, the really important things of life would take place here. I don't know, maybe God did have something to do with Paul. Paul probably thought, again, for the fourth time, another shipwreck. But God was doing something with them. Maybe God used the storms, not just for other people in our lives, but maybe also for ourselves. Maybe God's doing multiple works in us when life takes a turn on a dime, when it heads off in a direction that we couldn't possibly imagine. But I believe it's then that people watch you closer than ever. And I believe it is then that you can shine brighter for Christ than ever before. I saw it in my own experience when I lost my wife in 2012. I saw people watching me closely to see if I really believed what I said that I believed. 2 weeks after she passed away, I returned to the pulpit. So many people said to me, "You're not ready to come back." And I said, "I agree with you. Well, what am I going to do?" I just couldn't not do anything, just sit around the house and be engulfed by it. There were some difficult times. I remember we were doing Exodus at the time, and the children of Israel get pinned against the Red Sea, and then God opens up the Red Sea and delivers them. This was probably just 3 weeks after she passed, and I remember studying for that, and in a rare moment, I've been angry at God maybe a couple of times in my life. One time is because he wouldn't give me an aisle seat on an airplane, and that's the truth. I got mad at God. The things that we get mad at God about. I wanted a flight from Israel to the United States, but I wanted an aisle seat, and I didn't get one. I prayed for it fervently, and I didn't get one. I was mad at God. But I also, in doing that study, and I'm getting ready to teach, that God opens up ways of deliverance. And I remember saying to God, "Why didn't you open up a way of deliverance here?" I remember looking at it and saying, and I struggled. I taught that teaching, struggling through every aspect of it. But I believe that God uses those difficult, dark days, and who knows whose lives have been transformed from that. Not just me, but also those who saw Lisa. Those who watched her face death and die with such incredible courage, but also such incredible faith. There's something about someone who knows the Lord when they face death. It's so radically different. Not long after Lisa had died, maybe a couple of years, I guess, her aunt got the same thing, lung cancer, and was passing away. Only her aunt had rejected God her whole life. On her deathbed, she was as mean, as nasty, just as attacking, almost satanic as possible, until finally Lisa's mom led her to the Lord on her deathbed, and then there was peace in the midst of it. I'm persuaded that God uses our difficulties, who knows for what? Who knows what God is going to use you and what a difference you're going to make in the life of someone around you? There are 270 souls on this ship. So God puts them on a ship and sends them out into a storm, and Paul has to endure the storm. Who knows how many souls are affected by the storm that you face?
Practical Christian Living is a ministry of Calvary Chapel Tucson and is edited from Pastor Robert Furrow's weekly teachings. To hear current and past teachings, go to calvarytucson.com. If you'd like a CD copy of today's program, write to us at Practical Christian Living, 5170 South Julian Drive, Tucson, Arizona, 85706. Please include $3 to cover postage and materials. Practical Christian Living is made possible through the generosity of donations. Thanks to your support, hearts and lives are being changed. If you would like to support this ministry, send your donation to Practical Christian Living, 5170 South Julian Drive, Tucson, Arizona, 85706.
With every donation of $25 or more, we'll send you your choice of Pastor Robert's series through 1 Timothy, Pass the Torch, available on CD, or A Fading Crown, a study through 1 Samuel, available on USB flash drive. Our address, once again, is Practical Christian Living, 5170 South Julian Drive, Tucson, Arizona, 85706. We thank you for supporting this ministry. May you come to know the incredible grace and peace that can only come from Jesus.